It is so good to be here at Hope Valley Baptist Church. As I've come today, it's so good to see so many people that have been so significant parts of my life and have been so supportive of me in so many ways over the years. As I come, you know, I take time to reflect about the experiences that I have here. As I look back, I was here for 12 years before I moved up to Virginia, and I've been in Virginia for 7.5 years. But this week, I was reflecting, and I was thinking about different baptisms that I was able to share in, different times I was able to share in weddings, or when we went on mission trips to Haiti or Belize, or some of us went to the Baptist World Alliance in England. I think about having the Operation Inasmuch, or the Vacation Bible Schools that were always such a big event here, or when we'd have the Halloween carnivals. There were so many great things that I remember here, and so many wonderful times. I'm thankful for when Anne was pregnant with Madison and the shower that was given for us. And as I was thinking about that, I'll never forget that Sunday that I was at church. It was Blake's birthday. Madison's probably getting embarrassed now. And I came home from a deacon's meeting, and Matthew and Blake met me at the door. And they said, "The baby's about to come out. The baby's about to come out." Blake liked it being close to his birthday, but didn't want it on his birthday. So I said, "What about Blake's birthday?" And Matthew said, "We don't care. We're ready for the baby to come out." A few hours later, Madison was born, but it was 1:30 a.m. the next day, so they didn't have to share birthdays. But it is so good to be here and share so many memories and think back about all the different occasions. It was about 7.5 years ago that I moved to Chester. And since I've been in Chester, a lot of really positive things have happened. I've been in a great, supportive church. But as you know, I've also had some really difficult things in my life. The most difficult was the death of Matthew, our son. And then after Matthew's death, about 5 weeks later, my mother-in-law suddenly died. And then about a year after that, I found out that I had a genetic heart problem. Long story short, in 13 months, I had 3 open heart surgeries, a heart attack, and a stroke. But I'm glad to say I'm all doing well now. Everything's good. But you know, in the midst of tragedies, we can really experience God's presence sometimes. And after my 3rd open heart surgery, the next day after surgery, one of the nurses came in my room. And she said, "We were talking about you at the nurse's station." And when you hear this, you're like, "Oh no, what were they saying?" But she said, "We were talking about how it must be because of your faith that you're able to deal with things so well." And I responded, "Yes, my faith, but also so many people have been praying for me." And I began to talk about the people at my church and how they had been praying for me there at the hospital and gathered at church. And I talked about Hope Valley and other churches that had been praying for me. And then she responded, "You're really lucky." Thinking, after all I've been through, I would not say this is lucky, but very fortunate to have all the support and all the love that has been shown to me. This morning, I want us to think about how, you know, God, we experience God at different times in different ways. Some of you may remember the Experiencing God Bible study. I went through it with some of you here when I first came. Henry Blackaby, in that Bible study, there's different significant events, but one thing he talks about is spiritual markers. A spiritual marker is a significant time that you had with God. And sometimes in the Old Testament, they would actually build something as a marker for that event. And this morning, I want us to look at Jacob and how he built a spiritual marker and how later he returned to it. Because I think homecoming is a good time to think about experiences that we've had with God in the past, maybe return to that, not to try to relive the past, but to give us strength to move forward in our relationship with God. So I want us to begin by looking at a passage in Genesis 28. A little background, as you know, Isaac had 2 sons, Jacob and Esau. They were twin boys, but although they were twins, Esau was born first, and there were special privileges for the firstborn son. A double portion of the inheritance was literally divided among all the sons, girls weren't included, and the firstborn would get a double portion. So Esau was to get this double portion, but one day Esau was out hunting, he came in, and Jacob was preparing a meal, and he said, "Give me some of that to eat." He said, "I'll give it to you for your birthright." He said, "What good is my birthright, you know, if I starve to death?" "Sure, you can have that." So he tricked him into his birthright. And then later, as Isaac was near the end of his life, he told Esau to go out and hunt to prepare a meal for him, and then he would give him his blessing. Jacob was Rachel's favorite son, so she told him, "Go out and get a lamb, bring it in, and I'll cook it, and you can get your father's blessing." The father's vision was not good, so he said, "He may, you know, not be able to see that I'm not Esau, but he can tell that I'm not Esau. Esau is very hairy. He might want to feel my arms." She said, "Well, get a goat skin and put that on your arms." He must have been really hairy. So he comes in with the food, with the goat skin on his arms. The father gives him this blessing. And then later, when Esau comes in and asks for the blessing, he's really upset to learn that Jacob had already received the blessing. So Esau is out to kill Jacob, literally. And so the mother tells him to leave and to go to the land where their uncle Laban lives and to settle in there. And as he's leaving, he has this encounter with God. And it's known, we often talk about the story of the ladder to heaven. But let me just read from Genesis 28. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angel of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord your God, your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you'll spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I'll bring you back to this land, and I'll not leave you until I've done with you as I have promised. When Jacob woke up from his sleep, he said, surely the Lord was in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it as a pillar and poured oil on top of it, and he called the place Bethel, for the city had been called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I'm taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and the stone that I've set as a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you one-tenth. So this was a significant time. God comes to him in a dream of a ladder with angels ascending and descending. And at the top of the ladder is God. This symbolized that the angels and God were there to serve the needs of Jacob. God did not condemn Jacob for the way he deceived his brothers. God offered him grace. He offered grace at the time that Jacob probably expected it the least, but needed it the most. Then Jacob builds his altar and says that God will be his God. He further commits to return a tithe of all his possessions, and he claims that this place is Bethel, meaning the house of God. This was a significant spiritual event in Jacob's life. And so as we think about this event, I want you to think about significant spiritual events in your life. It could be, you know, a very positive thing. It could be when you accepted Christ or was baptized. It could be when you went off on a retreat or had some really positive thing going on in your life. It could be when you were sick and maybe the death of a loved one, you went through a tragedy and you really experienced God's presence. And maybe since that time you've drifted some from God. Maybe it's been just kind of a gradual drift, or maybe something happened in your life and you pulled away from God. This morning, I want us to think about those events so we can go back and go forward and reconnect with God. Well, after Jacob's experience at Bethel, he goes on to where his uncle Laban lives. And there he meets his uncle. He begins to work for him. And he also meets Laban's daughter, Rachel. He tells his uncle, I will work 7 years for you if you'll allow me to marry your daughter. So he worked 7 years, and then they had this big wedding celebration. And after the wedding, the next morning, he wakes up, and he is not with Rachel. He's with her older sister, Leah. Now, guys, could you imagine that the day after your wedding, you're waking up with your who you think is your bride's older sister? Not a good situation. So he goes to Laban, and he says, what is this? And he said, well, we have a custom that the older daughter is to be married first. He said, I'll allow you to marry Rachel if you'll agree to work 7 more years. So he works 7 more years. And he marries both of these daughters. And then they're looking for what wages they'll give. And he agrees that he'll continue to work if he will give him all the speckled and spotted sheep and goats for his wages. And then the majority of sheep and goats were speckled and spotted. And so Laban gets upset because he's getting, you know, my children, my grandchildren, and all my flocks. Jacob realizes he's upset with him, so he flees. And after he flees, Laban finds out, follows him. He finds him, and once he finds him, they reconnect in a positive way, and he kisses his daughters goodbye. And then Jacob goes on. At this time, he's ready to reconnect with his brother Esau. Remember the last time he saw Esau? Esau was out to kill him. But as he travels, he sends word to Esau that he's going to meet him. And Esau starts coming with him with 400 men. So Jacob is afraid. What does this mean? Is he going to overtake me and kill all of my family and my livestock? So they break up into two groups. And then as they get closer, they get to a point, and Jacob stays back on the other side of the stream. And he has this encounter with God. And in Genesis 32, it states, a man wrestled with him until daybreak. It appears that this was God or an angel. And Jacob's name is changed to Israel, meaning the one who strives with God. The next day, he meets his brother Esau. They reconnect, not as enemies, but now as brothers. And Esau tells him to settle in the land there. So he begins to settle in the land, and things seem like they're improving for him. But his only daughter, Dinah, is raped. The boys are irate about this. And so some of the people in that area say that they would like to intermarry with Jacob's family. Well, his sons, Simeon and Levi, said, we will intermarry with you if, as long as your men are all circumcised. Interesting story there. About 3 days later, it says, when the men were all good and sore, Simeon and Levi came in and killed all the men. And they took their possessions. And after this, Jacob is really upset. What is going to happen to me? What is going to happen to me? Why have you done this to your family? And that's where we pick up with the text for today. When he returns to Bethel, he returns back to that place where he encountered God. God said to Jacob, go up to Bethel and settle there and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. The Lord tells him to go back to Bethel. Bethel meaning the house of God. Go back there. God had probably been leading him to go back there in the past, but he couldn't hear it. But now he's open to hear God because this tragedy has happened. His sons have killed these people. He's plundered their land. And Jacob is afraid of what's going to happen to him and his family. He has a wake-up call, if you will, to go back to Bethel. It may be that in returning to Bethel, because he hadn't been returning his tithe and his offerings, but he realizes he must go now. Maybe you realize today is a time for you to reconnect with that former experience with God. Verse 2 continues, so Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, get rid of your foreign gods you have with you. Purify yourself and change your clothes. Then come, let us go to Bethel, where I will build an altar to God, who answered me in the time of my distress and has been with me wherever I've gone. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. He says, put away your foreign gods. Purify yourself. Change your garments. In other words, clean up your act. You know, sin is something that is a barrier, anything that we do that separates us from God. And sometimes sin keeps us from really experiencing God, and we need to clean up our act. God is there to receive us, to offer us grace no matter what. But as we turn from our sins, we are better able to experience God. Verse 5, then they set out, and the terror of God fell on the towns and all around them so that no one pursued them. As Jacob moved toward God, none of his enemies could stop him. Similarly, with us, as we really seek after God, no one will be able to stop us. Jacob and all the people with him came to Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan. There he built an altar, and he called the place El Bethel, because it was there that God revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother. Jacob arrives there, and he builds this altar, and he names the place El Bethel. Bethel means the house of God. El Bethel means the God of Bethel. The first time, he was stressing where he met God. Now, he is stressing the God that he meets. In returning to Bethel, he is returning to God. I love this account because I think it's something that can challenge us to think about our walk with God. Maybe you've wandered from God, and maybe it's time for you to return to reconnect with God. In Matthew 11, verse 28, Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and are heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Or as the Message paraphrase puts it, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover life. I'll show you how to really rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't let anything heavy or ill-fitting fall on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and light. We need to come to God, and God will restore us, and we will truly live. We will truly experience his presence for the first time, or maybe returning and reconnecting. And sometimes we think if we have this relationship with God, things should be good. But soon after this, Benjamin was born, and Rachel dies in delivery. After returning to God, things still can be difficult in our life. Jacob eventually settles in the land of his father, Canaan. After all this took place in Jacob's life, he goes back to Bethel. This is not the end of his story, but it's a turning point. He returns to the place that he encountered God and made a personal commitment to follow God. Afterwards, he goes on with his life with a renewed commitment. So as we look at this story, I want to ask you, what keeps you from returning to God? What keeps you from really encountering God and really seeking after God, maybe in the ways that you have in the past? It could be that there's sin in your life. It could be that you're saying, you know, I really don't have time. I'm not really making God a priority. We're not going to say we're not making God a priority, but maybe that's where we are in our life. We need to really come back to God. John Ortberg is one of my favorite speakers and writers. He's a pastor of a church in California. And he told about one time when he was having some struggles in his life, and he contacted his spiritual director. He said, this is a person that knew him well. And he said, I began to describe my life and things that were happening and said, what do I need to do to really be spiritually healthy? He said, there was a long pause. And then he said, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Ortberg said, okay, wrote that down. Okay, what else? He said, that's it. He said, from all the things that he described, the one thing he needed to do is ruthlessly eliminate hurry. That really speaks to me because so often I get in a hurry and we all get in a hurry. We get in a rush. We're busy. But we need to slow down so that we can truly encounter God. When I was pastor here, I began a program called Pastor Spiritual Guide. And I started meeting at a retreat center in northern Durham with some other pastors. And part of that included having some times of silence. It started off for an hour and a half. And I thought, how can I be silent for an hour and a half? This is forever. And then we went to 4 hours or 6 hours or 24 hours. And I realized as we slow down and have those times of silence, we can really find God and find peace in a significant way. And now almost once a month, I'll go off and spend most of the day in silence. I'll meet with a group. I prefer to have silence in community, which may not make sense. But connecting with other people, having devotion, and then spending that time in solitude to be able to connect with God. It's important to go off sometimes, but also to seek to have time on a regular basis to spend with God, to slow down, to experience God. Looking back to the text in verse 5, it states, a terror fell upon all the cities so that no one pursued them. If we truly focus on God, no one will be able to stop it. What if there's a sin that keeps us from experiencing God in an intimate way? There are all sorts of sins. Some are viewed different than others. But a sin is anything that separates us from God. And I challenge you, if there's a sin that you're struggling with, to turn to God, focus on God. Don't focus on that sin. Tony Campolo said, you know, we're all addicted to sin. He said, if you don't believe me, just quit. We all have sins that we struggle with. And there's programs like AA or NA for certain types of sins. And they're significant because there's support groups that are really try to help you with that. And we need whatever sin you have to find somebody that will help support you and help you turn from that sin so that you can be more fully focused on God. As we return to God, we may reconnect with our Bethel experience. But our goal is not to experience something like we did in the past, but it's to reconnect with God so that God can bring us to experience a new thing. We may meet God in ways that were similar to the past, but we need to allow God to do something new in us. So today is homecoming. Homecoming is a time to celebrate this church, to celebrate things that we've experienced here. But may it also be a time for you to celebrate your relationship with God, to reconnect with God, and to move forward with a renewed commitment. Maybe today is your day to accept Christ for the very first time. Maybe it's a day for you to renew your commitment to God. I invite you to respond however you feel led, and your pastor Bill will come to lead you in the invitation.
Thank you.